Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Don't miss out on amazing end-of-sale savings on bedding, curtains and more. Available now in-store or at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello there, a very good afternoon. You're welcome to Liveline. It's John Cook with you this afternoon until 3 o'clock. I hope you're well. It's 51551 for your text if you want to get in touch with us on the programme. 087-484-8888 by WhatsApp and liveline at rte.ie, of course, for your emails. Because I want to hear your thoughts on Budget 2026 coming up next Tuesday, of course. And we know no cost of living package planned, no energy credits planned. Despite the rising electricity bills you're getting, I'd love to get some examples from you on that. And let me know what you think or what's on your budget wish list, the one we've been putting together ahead of the ministerial announcements next week. We're hearing from carers and already others calling the show as well today. 0818 715 815. The live line is very much open, and already we're getting lots of complaints coming in about me trying to murder a boy's own song singing with Louise Duffy earlier on. Will we give it a better shot?
When the going gets tough, the tough gets going.
Oh, big news, because where are the tough going? Boyzone, where are they going? Michelle, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
Michelle, you heard the big news today. Boyzone, they're back. One big final farewell, one big concert in London. What do you think?
I think it's brilliant that they're back, but I don't think it's brilliant that their one and only date is in London. Like, that's a real kick in the teeth of the Irish fans.
That's how you feel?
Oh, yeah. And it's the comments that Ronan made about it is what is really, really is hurting the Irish fans. Because without the Irish fans, they wouldn't have made it to the UK. So Ronan had said that it was the UK that made them and embraced them, and, you know, for the past 33 years. And that's why they chose the venue, the Emirates Stadium in London. And, like, that was just... It was like a dagger in the heart.
Oh, you're hurting from this. Yeah, he said they had great times in London. They've been wanting to do a big stadium. It's the Emirates. That's where they want to be. We can have a quick listen to what some of the Boyzone members, Ronan Keating and Shane Lynch and Keith Duffy, had to say on Breakfast Television.
It's going to happen on the 6th of June in London. It's very exciting for us. We were very lucky to play multiple arenas across the UK. We had 10 nights at Wembley. We never played stadiums. Everybody has been part of Boyzone's journey, this story. They've cried with us, they've laughed with us through the documentary. And now, you know, to get to Emirates together, all of us, and, you know, say our final farewell the way we want to do it will be pretty powerful, I think.
Pretty powerful. Michelle, it's not the kind of power we were hoping for here, though.
No, we have stadiums. We have stadiums here.
Like, are you listening, hello? Ronan? Tell him, Michelle. Tell him.
Oh, my God. It's really, really hurtful. And it's not really the fact that it's in London, okay? Because we could have got behind that. It's just the comments made, you know, that, like, they forget where they came from. You know, and it's really, really difficult. So if they'd have come out and said, oh, we're playing London because we would have loved to play our hometown, but we couldn't get the venue at the time, or something like that, we could have got behind that. But it wasn't. It wasn't acknowledging where they're from or who made them, because without the Irish fans, they wouldn't have got to the UK.
When did you hear about the concert, Michelle? Or had you been watching out in the hope of getting to see them one more time?
Yeah, like, well, we're all ready, like, to get for a comeback. But there's no way I travel to London. Like,
They've been hinting about it since the documentary, haven't they?
Yeah, yeah. And I watched the documentary in one sitting, like, and cried my eyes out. Because when you're if you're a boy zone fan from the beginning, you would have got very close to them, you know, because you've seen them a lot. That, like, it was your whole personality at the time and everything that you lived for, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So you got quite close to them. So you kind of knew them, you know, and you were on a first name basis with them. Stephen was my favourite.
Mm-hmm.
And I got very close to him and his family, you know. And at that time, it was very different when you were a fan. Like, his mum and dad, Margaret and Martin, they'd bring you into the house and everything, mm-hmm. have a cup of tea and talk about Stephen when he wasn't there.
You were in Stephen Gately's house?
Many times.
And not just as a friend, it was as a fan. You knocked on the door. His parents were delighted to meet you, it seems.
Yeah, like they really embraced the fans, you know, and it was like it wasn't in a really good area because I was in several places, you know, but it was just the community that was there was amazing. Like, all the Boyzone fans would travel everywhere, mm-hmm. to go and see them, you know, and they'd meet outside the Royal Dublin and we'd all go and we'd see them there, you know, and then they'd get into their little white van and they'd go. And then when they were in the UK, then if they came home, we'd all go to the airport to welcome them home. Like,
mm-hmm.
you know, so we were always behind them and supporting them and loving them, you know. So,
and that's what you want to do now, Michelle, is welcome them home. And you're wondering, like the rest of us, why they've chose London. If anyone knows, 51551 for your text if you want to get in touch with us on this. If you're a member of Boyzone, Ronan, Shane, Keith or Mikey, 0818 715815. Michelle, you sound like you have a few inroads there. Maybe a few numbers you could ask them yourself as well, could you?
Not anymore, no.
Michelle, take me back, because it's far from stadiums like the Emirates that these boys were raised, though they went so far and have done us proud, of course. Where did you see Boyzone first?
First, I think it was actually in Bingo Hall in Whitehall. I think that was my first time seeing them, like, sing. And they didn't even have any songs at that time, so they were doing, like, covers. And
is this when they were dancing on the Late Late Show as well?
Yeah, like it was, but like the fans embraced them, you know, mm-hmm. because we really wanted an Irish boy band. We really, really wanted one, you know, and we were determined to get one. So we followed mm-hmm. them everywhere. And then, like, they did become bigger and bigger and bigger. And like when they went then to play, it was a Point Depot at the time. We were all in the front row, you know, it was a different time back then. It was uh-huh. amazing. And because that was such, like, a part of my growing up, you know, in my teenage years, like, to go and see them now as an adult, like, you know, it'd be just, like, amazing to relive uh-huh. all that, you know.
Great memories, but, Michelle. You were a starstruck, yeah. Love-struck teenager, perhaps, were you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Paint the scene for us. What were you shouting?
Oh, just, like, I wasn't shouting anything. I was just like singing the song with them.
What was the song? What stands out?
Well, Key to My Life stands out to me. It has a very personal, like, I had a personal experience with that song. So Stephen, his mum and his dad brought us in to the into the house and played us the video before it went out, like.
Oh, wow.
And they were, like, Stephen was so excited because, like, he was like, oh, my God, this video was just amazing. And I always remember that. And that just stands out. So Key to My Life would be one of my, like, all-time favourites. Uh-huh.
And sorry, when you were here looking at this exclusive video in Stephen Gately's house, the late Stephen Gately, of course, it was with his mum and dad, or did you get to meet him?
Oh, he was there as well.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah, we got very, very close to the boys.
You were, like, definitely, you know, speechless that day, were you, Michelle?
No, because Stephen actually kind of became a friend, you know. We didn't see him as this, like, boy band member at the time because it was, like, we spent so much time with them, you know. You got to know them. And I remember he was in Smash Hits, and he actually mentioned me and my friends in Smash Hits. And I was like, oh, my God!
You must have been devastated with the loss of Stephen Gately, like so many fans, and of course the lads yeah. themselves and his family.
Yeah, yeah. We went to the funeral in several places along with like all the other fans. Like it was just, mm-hmm. it was devastating.
And in fairness to his bandmates, they say they really want to celebrate him. It won't be the same without him, but they want to honour him in this concert as well. But in London, will you go, Michelle?
No. No. Definitely not.
You will not go to this boy's own final farewell, this one last hurrah, this big concert, the boys back together one last time?
No. It'll break my heart, like.
Does it make you kind of sad then? Because obviously this is something you really wanted.
Oh, I'm so sad. I'm so, so sad. Oh, it is what it is. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to go. Just purely because of the comments that was made, you know, and that Ireland was just dismissed, you know.
Dismissed, you feel?
Yeah, that's how I feel. You know, like there wasn't an announcement like, oh, we would have loved to play Ireland, but there's only one gig. And the reasons why they chose it, rather than saying that it was the UK that embraced them and made them. And, you know, it just doesn't sit right with me at all.
I suppose they were on British television. You can see why they have to pay tribute to their English fans there as well. But room for maybe one more farewell in Ireland. Was that what you were thinking, Michelle?
Yeah. I didn't think this was going to be like their one and only. Like, and Ronan was so adamant that it's only one, you know, that they're not getting back together. This is not, and it's like he's referring to it as a party, you know, and he's like, this is it. Like, we're not getting back together. And so, like, there's no hope of an Irish gig, you know, to look forward to. So you either go to that, travel to the UK, or that's it. You don't get to see them.
Do you think many fans will?
I think they will, yeah. The Boyzone fans are so loyal. And yeah, I do feel like a lot of them will travel. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you'll have like fans like me that won't.
And you're a loyal fan, Michelle. You got closer than most getting to know Stephen Gately and his family back in the good days. But no, you don't want to do it.
No, definitely not. No. I just think it's a kick in the teeth to us.
A kick in the teeth.
And yeah, that's how I feel. I'm so hurt, like.
I'm sorry to hear that, Michelle, because I think this is personal to you, isn't it?
Oh, very personal, because they were a huge part of my life for so long. For me not to be at it now is just going to be, it's going to be hard. Mm-hmm. It's going to be hard. But then again, having said that, they're not the same since Stephen died. It's not the same. You know, boys are not the same, and they do their best, you know, to pay tribute to him and all at the concert. But for someone like me, who absolutely like adored Stephen, it's not the same, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it would have been nice if they did one last show in Ireland, because we have stadiums there too.
Of course we have stadiums here too. Where do you want to see them, Michelle? Is it back in the Whitehall Bingo Club, or maybe they'd attract a bigger crowd than that?
I'd love to play the Whitehall Bingo Club again. That was so much fun.
Uh-huh. I suppose you'll never have those kind of days again, but the memories, of course, it does bring it back, doesn't it? Even when you, particularly when you get to see how well they've done and you get to enjoy it at a later stage in life for all of us, including them.
Yeah, yeah. And like I tell my daughter all about like those days, you know, because she was a One Direction fan, mm-hmm. you know, so she gets it. She didn't lick it off a stone. So, but she'd just be in awe when I tell her, because they were Irish and you got to see them all the time. It's so different to like her love of One Direction, because she's never met them, or, you know, it's so different, where the Irish fans really got to know them. And, mm-hmm. you know, it was really, really a part of our lives, you know.
51551, if you want to get in touch, like Michelle on this. She feels dismissed. This is personal for the Irish fans of Boyzone, she says, not to have them playing this final, her farewell in Dublin. Christo, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, John. You're doing a great job.
Oh, thanks very much. Thanks for calling Liveline. Tell me how you feel about Boyzone.
Well, John, I just listen to your show every day, and I'm absolutely appalled at the insult to the Irish people that Boyzone picked London above all places. They forgot where they started from. It all started on the Late Late Show many, many years ago. I mean, I saw that night when they came on, and I think it's a terrible insult. They could have picked Dublin to do a gig, maybe like the Aviva, maybe Crow Park or someplace like that, you know? Mm-hmm. I think it's a terrible insult, and he should be told about how the Irish people feel about this. You know, it's terrible.
Well, what would you say to him? I've met Ronan Keating, or I've interviewed him for radio previously. He's a nice fella. He does great work for so many great causes as well. Surely he hasn't forgotten where he came from.
Well, I think he has. I think he has, John. I think maybe he's got maybe over his too big for his boots, as they used to say, that he has forgotten the Irish people and where it all started. Now, that's what I would say to him.
Okay.
That he could have picked Dublin as a farewell venue instead of London.
Were you a fan yourself, Christo, over the years?
Well, I didn't. I never went to see them, John. But I mean, I bought some of the records when they came out and singles. You know.
Any favourite song for you?
I suppose maybe the one they did that the Osmonds had, Love Me For A Reason.
Okay. It was one of the early ones, wasn't it? Yeah, everyone associates 70s, it, of a certain age associates it with Boyzone, but you remember the Osmonds too as well, Love Me For A Reason as well. But
everyone
did love them, and for good reason too. They were Irish, they were our own, wasn't it?
They were indeed our own. You know, I mean, it's a terrible. He should be informed of how the Irish people feel now about this. You know,
uh-huh.
I mean, it's a terrible, terrible slap in the teeth. So it is to the Irish people.
A terrible slap in the teeth. 51551 for your thoughts. They're strong words, and I'm sure they didn't mean anything by this, or did they? I don't know. As I said, 0818715815 if you want to get in touch with us as well. We'd love to hear from Boyzone as well, because I'm sure they'll comment on this at some stage too. Doug, good afternoon.
How are you doing, John? How are you?
I'm very well. Doug, tell us how you feel about all of this.
Listen, you know what's going to happen, John. You do know that they'll do the gig in the Emirates. It'll be an amazing success. And then they'll say, oh, my God, let's do another 10. And, you know, they'll end up probably playing Crow Park.
Yeah, I can't help wondering if we're being hooked into some kind of a marketing ploy here. What do you think?
Yeah, but does it really matter? I mean, Boyzone, as, you know, obviously the MC for 2FM Beat on the Street way back in the day.
I thought I recognised that voice.
Well, there you go. And I recognise yours, John, by the way. You are doing a great job. Love it. You're a shoe-in for that gig, I tell you. But honestly, the Beat on the Street in 1994, this was just after the Late Late Show, and there was a photo shoot on the lawn in RTE, and all the jocks were there, myself, Barry Lang, Tony Fenton, etc., Lorca Murray. And then they wheeled out Boyzone, and we kind of said to ourselves, my God, are they serious? Will they ever make it? But you have to say, well done. Absolutely phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And they've done a great job. And, you know, I love Boyzone. Well done, man. Well mm-hmm. done. Fantastic.
Okay, but as someone who loves Boyzone as well, you know how much the Irish fans mean to them too. Are these two, these words are strong, forgetting where they came from. What do you think?
No, absolutely not forgetting where they... It's a marketing ploy. They'll be gigging in Ireland. Don't worry about it. It'll happen. I can't see it not happening. I mean, are you honestly telling me they're just going to do one gig in the Emirates and then shut up shop?
I wouldn't have thought so until the comments Michelle mentioned there and others, and they mentioned a final farewell, one for the road, 33 and a third years together is how they put it. One for the road, said Shane Lynch. Not a tour. They made it clear. They said not a tour. Things often change in this business, though, of course, Doug.
Absolutely. So look, my final saying is that it will be a tour.
Well, before you have your final say, I better remind listeners, they didn't know you as Doug on the radio, did they?
No, I was known as DJ Electric Eddie, and it was the MC and the 2FM Beat on the Street back in the day, which, to be honest with you, they were phenomenal days. We went from Stephen's Green with 15,000 people to Cork and Lee Fields with 30 to 35,000 people. Great fun, great gigs, and unbelievably good memories.
And I'm sure...
do remember...
Sorry, Doug. Yeah, people have great memories of you as Electric Eddie, the Eye in the Sky as well. Tell me more of your great memories of those beats on the street.
Listen, the beat on the street was phenomenal. I mean, back in the day, no mobile phones, no communication. And it was just basically a giant open-air disco with an amazing stage sponsored by 7-Up and X-Division back in the day. And basically all the jocks used to go out onto the stage, do their thing. I'd introduce them. I'd also do a couple of karaoke numbers. And it's just amazing. It worked. It worked. It just wouldn't work nowadays, but because, you know, 2FM ain't what it was back in the day. 2FM was really the station, but not anymore, I'm afraid.
Well, I suppose we so many stations, still a great station and great music as well, but I suppose we so much of a choice now as well. And we don't have maybe something that you had in those beats on the street, as you said, just people, everyone coming out if it was in your town or city and having fun and letting themselves go.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, they were just phenomenal events, and it was really great to be a part of it. But as you say, there's too much choice nowadays, too many radio stations, too many everything, and everything's on tap, instant, you know. Back in the day, back in those days, in the late 80s, early 90s, you know, if you wanted to get your hands on the latest tunes, you had to queue up and actually buy either a 45 and then it progressed to CDs. Mm-hmm. And but nowadays, everything's instant on tap.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, great memories and great days.
Doug, you heard people say they feel dismissed, insulted, forgotten about here. Have the lads forgotten where they came from? Is there any way they can work their way back from this one?
Listen, I don't believe a board. I don't believe any of that. The lads will be playing in Dublin. Don't you worry about it. It's going to happen. To me, it's a marketing ploy, but I'd be a bit cynical like that. And knowing how the business works to a certain extent, definitely.
What are they going to have to do to work their way back now? Come on.
Well, they're either going to have to play Working My Way Back to You or Love Me for a Reason, but I think I hear Working My Way Back to You in the background.
I'd say you could sing it too, Doug, as well.
I could.
Come back, Ronan. Come back, Shane and Keith and Mikey. And there is still room for redemption here, is what you're saying.
Yeah, and John, if you can get your hands on 4 premium level tickets at the Emirates, give me a shout, will you?
You're going, are you?
Yeah, of course I'll go to get the ticket.
51551, if anyone wants to get in touch on this as well. Stay with us if you can. Anne, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, John. How are you?
Very well, thank you. How do you feel about the news of this supposed snub from Boyzone, as some fans are describing this farewell gig in London?
Yeah, well, I just think, I don't know if I agree that it's a marketing ploy, but, like, they've annoyed their Irish fans now anyways. And, you know, like, I remember going back all those years, and when they started off first, and myself and my sisters and my cousins, we went to see them in places like Ballinasloe and Athlone in the, what used to be called the Regional Technical College back then. But, you know, or even in my local town where I live now, in Ballygar in County Galway, they have a carnival every year. And it's like a small, small town, or even a village, you could say. And Boyzone played there in the Marquee, and it was phenomenal. You know, that's where they started out. And that's, you know, it was all those fans that got behind them that got them into the UK.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and here they are now saying, you know, we have to be loyal to our UK fans, like, and us Irish fans are just left. And I mean, even if your last caller there, you know, just said, oh, perhaps, you know, if it was a marketing ploy, but they've annoyed their Irish fans now anyway. So even if they came to Ireland, I don't even know if I'd go and see them.
So you wouldn't go to London?
I'm definitely not going to London. 100% not going to London. No way.
And if they show up in Dublin?
Oh, they'll have to do some sort of looking up now to their Irish fans, I think. But, you know, like...
What about Ballinasloe, Anne? Would they need to come that close at this stage?
Ballinasloe fair now next week. I think the Ballinasloe will probably be a bit beneath them now at this stage. But, like, I mean, they could easily have done... Even if they didn't do Croke Park, they could easily have done the Three Arena. Like, what, 2 nights at the Three Arena, like, they'd have sold it out, no problem. But, yeah,
and Dublin's definitely not beneath them. But you're saying that if they do come out and they announce more gigs, more final farewells, I don't know, Electric Eddie or Doug thought they will, of course, you'll have to think twice about whether you go.
I definitely will think twice. Yeah, definitely will think twice. Whereas, like, if they had just announced an Irish and UK, I would definitely have gone. I would have, you know what I mean? I would have fought hard to get tickets. But now it's like, well, I suppose the fans are just asking themselves why. You know?
Why not us? Yeah, it's a good question. 51551 or 0818715815. Audrey, good afternoon.
Hello, how are you?
I'm very well, and yourself?
Well, not the better for Ronan's little comments yesterday now, I have to tell you.
Uh-huh. Well, you were at the bingo hall in Whitehall as well, were you?
I was. Oh, yeah. Fan since primary.
Since primary school. We'll come back to Audrey in a moment if we can. It's 51551 for your texts. Vivian, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, John. How are you?
I'm very well, and thanks for joining us as well. Tell us your thoughts
on
Boyzone.
Exactly the same as every one of those callers there. They forget where they came from. And I'm not young now, mind you. But I remember the first time we saw them on The Late Late, that's where they got their kickoff start.
Yeah.
Gay Byrne, The Late Late Show. And here they are now, and they're going England. Ireland should be their first choice. You don't forget your roots, John.
Uh-huh.
No matter what you are, who you are. I heard that lad before, the DJ or whatever. You know, they'd come. But with all your other, I agree with all your others there.
Uh-huh.
They should have started here. Then go if they want to go to England. You know.
Surely they haven't forgot their roots, though.
Well, I mean, where did they come from? I remember Brian McFadden now. Down, I used to meet him, my daughter's in Beliver, her neighbour.
Uh-huh. We're in a different band now.
And, you know, he was gone, yeah. But, like, we loved them, the people. Like, Ireland is Irish. They're Irish. They started here.
Mm-hmm.
Then go to England. Yep. Then go around the world if they want to.
Yeah, I see your point completely.
They're Irish fans. I mean, all the hundreds that supports them here. And you hear them all there now. That, even that lady, she's not prepared to go over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're proud of Westlife. We're proud of Boyzone too, but we want them here. Yeah, don't forget where you came from is what you're saying.
Don't forget where you came from. You're mm-hmm. Irish. They're Irish. They mm-hmm. started. They got their go here. They got their chance here. So stick with it. Then go to England, then go to France, then go to wherever they have to go.
Okay. Liveline at RTE.ie if you want to get in touch with us as well today. We'd love to hear from Boyzone as well, or from Ronan or any of the lads,
yes,
to explain what's going on here.
It'd be very interesting. Yes,
it certainly would. 0818715815 is the number. Ronan Keating has been on Magic FM explaining the reasons for this London concert this afternoon, I'm told. We can have a quick listen.
We came here, we did Saturday Morning Kids TV, we did Smash Hits. We were welcomed with open arms. There was no pop music in Ireland. We had to go to the UK to kind of be discovered and to be accepted. And from that, we could then go back to Ireland and be the toast of the town. So we came to London to, you know, to learn our craft. And we've kind of called it home for the last 33 years.
Learned their craft in London, called it home. Audrey, what do you think?
That's the very comments that tipped me over the edge yesterday, because the one gig only in the UK, I maybe could have possibly somehow could have forgiven that had they said it was scheduling conflict or otherwise. But when he come on and said that yesterday, I thought, my God, what a kick in the teeth to the fans that literally travelled the length and breadth of the country when they were just kids that had parents driving them to the airport to meet them coming home from the UK to welcome them back home and celebrate their successes here. Like, what an absolute kick in the teeth to all the kids that really were the ones that championed them from day one. I can't actually believe he said that. I really can't.
I'm a bit surprised at it myself when you put it like that too, Audrey, because surely he knows we can hear what you're saying, Ronan, in London or wherever. We learned our craft there. We learned to call it home. What about Dublin?
Where now. Like, what was he thinking when he said that? There was about a million other things he could have said that might have been forgivable. But I don't know, that to me now is a step too far. And beforehand, I kind of said to my family, oh my God, boys on, they're announcing this, they're going to do this tour. I'm going to go multiple times. I thought there might be a few dates. I was like, I don't mind, I'll go alone. I was very happy to travel, actually. I would have travelled certainly within Ireland.
Right.
Actually made a little holiday of it and got overseas. And there was the one date, like I said, I was a bit like, what? Really one date? I thought maybe there'll be another announcement. You know, they may announce something for Ireland later. But that interview there, those comments there, we had to go to the UK to be accepted. We had to go there to make our name. And then he goes on to say that we call the UK home and have done for 33 years. What? Are you serious? I mean, wow.
It sounds like a bit of a bitter breakup song here, Audrey, at this stage. Is there a way back for you? Will you go to see them in London?
No, absolutely not. Stop. I wouldn't go if you put me on the plane and handed me the ticket. No way.
And if they come to Dublin, if he's listening now and maybe thinks, oh, lads, you know, we better remember Dublin here as well. Would you go?
I don't. The fact he would even have to say, whoopsie, we forgot about Dublin, is wild to me. It's absolutely wild. I don't know. When I tell you, like, they are the first concert I ever went to, the first tape I ever bought in the shop, posters, ceilings, everything, cover all over the place. And now I'm kind of like, wow, where did he come out with that from? Mm-hmm. I don't think there's any coming back from this for me. And that is like breaking my primary child heart.
Oh, it's over, Ronan. It's over. That's what you're saying.
Devastated. He was the first man I ever thought I was going to marry.
Audrey, I'm so sorry. Was there a favourite song, or could you even stomach it now?
I couldn't, and I accidentally found myself singing Picture You yesterday, and I had to take a lie down. I wasn't the better for it at all.
Oh, Audrey, I'm so sorry. Come here. Stay listening to us. We'll see what we can find out. We're still waiting to hear from Boyzone as well. You might need to lie down while you're listening, though. Adrian, good afternoon.
How are things? Audrey, don't give up hope. Come on.
What are you saying, Adrian?
I'm telling her not to give up hope. Don't give up on the boys.
Don't That's give up
easy.
Hope.
Boyzone's music travels the sea, it travels mountains. There's no, it's not defined for one country.
Okay, you sound like a big fan, Adrian.
Huge fan. Going back a long time, yeah.
Favourite song for you?
No matter what, would have to be my favourite song.
Uh-huh. No matter what. Well, what if they announce that London is their home and that's where they learn their craft and that's why this has to be the one last hurrah, our final farewell in London?
Well, I'll be there. I'll be travelling.
You're going to London?
Wild horses won't get you back.
Uh-huh. No matter what, you're going to be there, no matter where.
No, you might make me sing it now in a second.
Oh, Adrian, is that an offer?
Well, I can't quite do Ronan's voice, but I actually was telling your researcher, me and a few of my mates in school won the talent contest back in 1998, singing No Matter What.
You won the school talent contest in 1998.
Yeah. I'm going to shame them now, but I'm going to say their names. There's Ross O'Carroll, he of Dublin Hurling fame, and Ross O'Boyle and Owen McHugh were my fellow members. And No Matter What was the clincher that tipped it over the line for the judges.
And where was the school, Adrian?
Summerhill in Sligo, Summerhill College.
This was Sligo's answer to Boyzone. I know that's Westlife, but anyway, we'll talk about that another day.
We won't mention Westlife. Yeah.
You were the original Sligo answer to Boyzone, was it?
Well, we tried it. We never quite hit the heights.
Uh-huh. Did you hit the high notes, though?
Oh, well, I was Ronan, would you believe, yeah.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't quite do that. No matter what. I couldn't quite get the
Go
time.
On, Adrian. You'll get there. Go on.
I couldn't do it at this time on a wedding set.
One last chance, Adrian. This is your moment of fame.
No, I can't. I'll do it in London. I'll call in live from London.
You'll call in live from London. Well, Adrian is the only Boyzone fan heading to London so far that we've spoken today. Everyone else says, no matter what, not going. 51551. Thanks to you all.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1. 0818 715 815.
And 51551 for your text. 087-484-8888 on WhatsApp if you want to get in touch with us about anything from Boyzone to the budget or anything else besides as well. We love to hear from you. Frances Meehan, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
And Frances, thanks very much for joining us. Will you tell me about the beach in Bun and Inver in County Donegal where you go?
Yeah, well, surely. The 17th of August, myself and my son and a few of his cousins were there swimming. And they were joined then by another three wee boys. And they all were in the water and they decided they were going to swim from the pier over to the beach. And then about halfway across, one of the boys got into a little bit of difficulty.
Okay.
Where he kind of started to panic. And
I'll bring you back just a second, Frances, just for a minute, because
that's okay.
You were having a good time, it sounds like. I'm thinking of the time as well. We had some great summer days this summer, weather-wise as well. Everyone having a good time, but you began to get worried.
That's right. When I heard the other wee boy, Pather, saying that he didn't think he was going to make it, and he kind of went under the water, and Declan, my son, wasn't too far from him. So he came back over to him and I could hear him saying to him, saying to Pather, "It'll be okay, Pather. I will stay with you and I will take you back to the pier. Don't panic." And
where were you when all this was going on, Frances?
I was standing on the pier watching them just crossing over.
And you could see
it? That's where I was. I could see them and I could hear. I knew there was, I could hear just Pather saying, "You know, I'm not going to make it." Like I could hear that. Just.
And what was going through your head at that moment?
To be honest, it was a very scary moment because, as you know, when somebody is in trouble like that, you're afraid like that, you know, the two of them could go under, like, you know. But Declan didn't hesitate. Declan just came to him and, you know, just calmed him down and told him to hold on to him and that he would bring him back to the pier and not to panic. And that's exactly what the two boys done then. They came together and they came back to the pier. Thank God. And myself and Pather's mammy were standing then at the pier and we were all emotional, of course.
Oh, my God, the relief.
Definitely, it was a big relief, but it turned out very well for both of us. Like for myself and Patricia and the two boys, we were so glad that the boys were okay. That's all that mattered.
How old is Declan?
Declan is 15 and Pather is 12.
God, you must have just hugged them so tight, Frances.
Oh, we sure did. It was a huge relief, you know, that everything turned out well. We were supposed to be there that day. That's how you look at things like that, like, you know. And, like, Declan himself, like, he has, he had an AVM when he was 5. That is where a vein ruptures in your brain. Like, only 1% of the world has this. But he was unlucky that his ruptured when he was 5 years old. And out of that, Declan got a heavy stroke, left-hand side. So Declan has no power in his left arm, half the power in his leg, and his eyesight is missing in both eyes, left-hand side, on both eyes.
But a stroke, not a problem a stroke, to Frances. Him. Sorry, just to explain. At the age of 5?
Yeah, that's right. Out of this AVM that Declan, like it ruptured. He had a bleed in the brain, and that's exactly what happened. But it doesn't stop Declan, as you can see with him. Like, it doesn't... He just keeps going. Nothing is that he can't do. Like we say to him, like people say to him, maybe he can't do this deck. And he say, well, I'll find the way to do it. Maybe I can't do it that way, but there'll be another way. Uh-huh. Like he's one of them kids, like, you know, and
never gives up.
Never gives up. So it wasn't too surprising that Declan was the boy that went to Pather and helped Pather. Like, never thinking, I suppose. And even now, Declan doesn't think it's a big deal. Because, like, he's, as his words are always, sure, everybody would do the same thing. You know, it's like, you know, isn't that what everybody would do? Like, you know,
he's very modest with it too, as well. Frances, it sounds like you and Declan have been through a lot over the years.
Yes, Declan himself has been through a good bit. Like when that AVM ruptured, Declan spent 6 months on and off in Dublin. Like from. We went into Temple Street at the end of July. We were there right through to Christmas time before he came back to Donegal. So it was a, you know, it's a journey. And from that, like Declan is always attending hospitals in Dublin. Like he's constantly, we go into the NRH for, he goes in for physio and all the time. We have his team here in Donegal. Like it's a constant and always will be for the rest of his life. But that doesn't faze him, it doesn't stop him, like, you know, he does not think anything of it. Still, it's part of the norm for him now, and he just gets on with it. Like, that's just the way it is, you know.
you've been through so many of those moments of worry and panic yourself, I'd say, over the years. And then the relief as well when you see just how amazing it sounds like Declan really is.
Declan definitely is. Like, people say to us, like, you know, it's got a lot to do with the parents. But to be honest with you, Declan leads us. We just follow behind him. Like, you know, he is one of them that, you know, nothing stops him. Like, he is just, you know, he takes it on his chin, whatever's thrown at him, he'll get on with it. And that's just the way he goes. Like, you know, mm-hmm. we just follow his example. Like, we're very lucky with Declan. You know, still Declan is such a bubbly, sociable kid. Like, you know, he's loves chatting to people and everybody knows him. And like, in our area, there's nobody that doesn't know Declan Meehan. You know, he's, and it's a good thing. Like, you know, it's and it's lovely for him. Like, you know, even like this is going on now, this is really kind of, you know, the story has taken over so much, like, you know, and all the phone calls.
Well, he deserves the attention and the praise as well. If he's not too, if his ears aren't burning too much or he's not too embarrassed, what an inspiration at the age of 15. Would Declan have a word? Is he with you?
He is with me, but he is a wee bit shy.
I'd tell him not to be shy or modest. He's an everyday hero. Not everyone can do this kind of thing. 51551, but you'll do well to beat Declan's story. Good afternoon, Declan.
Hello.
How are you?
Good afternoon. I'm good.
What do you make of your mam going on about you there and praising you all the time as well? Or is it always like that, Declan?
Yeah.
Not a bad word between you, I'd say.
No.
Declan, were you always a good swimmer?
Yeah, it was.
And has that been since recovering, say, from your stroke or coming to terms with living with disability or the loss of power? Was swimming part of your training?
Yeah, it was.
Part of the rehabilitation?
I do a lot of exercise also.
Say that again, please.
I do a lot of exercise also.
Right. And how do you feel in the water, Declan? Do you feel confident? Because it sounds like you certainly were that day.
Love it.
Sounds like a lovely day on the beach there.
Yeah, I love it.
When you heard Pather panicking, a 12-year-old boy panicking and saying, "I'm not going to make it," what was going through your mind, Declan?
Just tell him to calm down, and I'll bring you back. Back to the pier and then just talking to him.
What did you say to him then when you got back?
Give him a big hug and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And have you been back in the water since yourself or Pather?
Yeah, I have.
Uh huh. Because it's something.
All the time, I am. But I'm not sure about Pather.
Uh huh. So. Yeah, it's something that can put someone off, isn't it? Or you could be afraid of it again after a life-threatening sort of a event like that. What would you say to someone in that situation, Declan?
Don't be afraid.
Mm-hmm.
Go back in the water.
Fair play to you, Declan. Well done, Declan. I hope you're enjoying all the attention and getting lots of great praise and credit and plenty of leeway on the homework or the treats or whatever else for this.
Everybody would do the exact same thing.
Ah, you say that. You say that. Everybody would do the exact same thing. But I think you're very brave as well, Declan. Do you feel it?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
Good man. Good man. I hope you always do as well. Francis and Declan, stay with us there as well. Declan is probably ready to tell me where to go and say, go away out of that. I don't want to keep talking to this old fella. But Antoinette is on the line too. 51551 if you want to get in touch with us. Hi, Antoinette.
Hi, how are you?
Francis, very well.
Declan.
Good. Annette, how are you?
Good. I was just ringing in. I heard you on the radio, and Declan is more than just what he did above in the saving somebody's life. Fair play to him, because I'll tell you, I certainly wouldn't have the courage. But I have to say that because of Declan, two things have happened with my son, who knows Declan,
uh-huh.
or they spent some weeks together in the National Rehab. We've now linked in with his swimming instructor because of what Frances, the information she gave me. So we are going travelling up all the way up to Donegal because there's somebody up there working well, apparently working very well and obviously with Declan. So we're actually, because of them, we're going up there. And the other thing is Declan also, when we were in the rehab, and I know Frances knows this, one of the things my son can't do at the moment very well is running is a bit difficult. But Declan runs, is that right, Frances? And they told us how to run and learn on the beach.
Yeah, that's right.
And to learn on the beach and that he would get it. So Declan has been more than he mightn't realise it, but some of the stuff that we learned from him has actually helped my son indirectly and telling. So we're going to Donegal and we're trying to learn how to run on a beach. You know, so he's a great lad.
I think I know a man that could help you out there. So Declan is going to inspire again and again.
Yeah, I'm afraid he is. Yeah, he's very good.
Frances and Declan are in Donegal. Yeah. Antoinette, you're in Limerick, is it?
That's we're right, in County Limerick,
And you became firm friends through hospital in Dublin.
Well, through the National Rehab, because they, you know, when you get to meet other parents in almost, my son had a traumatic brain injury due to an RTA, but it doesn't matter what they've been through, their similarities and the life they have to go on afterwards is more or less the same, I think.
And Antoinette, how is your son doing after the car crash?
He's fine. He's you know, we don't go into it too much, but he's got a lot of he's got a few disabilities,
that's okay.
Obviously, now he's got, and right side of weakness, etc. But he's doing really well. And the fact that even he wants to go back swimming, and one of the things they told us in the NRH, because we know Declan is excellent, and Declan and Dahi will be more or less similar, I think, Frances, would I be right in saying that?
Yes, that's right.
They were trying to get Dahi to go back swimming, but they've taught us, so instead of focusing on the disability on his right side, to try and learn on his left side, work. And we were watching Declan as well, and because of that, we're going to try and meet this person in Donegal now and see. Now, we're not at the level Declan and I living by the sea. I mean, we live a good hour and a half from even looking at a sea, not a mind beside one. So he's an inspiration really all round. It's not just about the story above in Donegal, but he's done a lot more and probably they don't realise how they've helped us as well.
Frances, you're delighted to hear Antoinette, I think.
Oh, thank you so much for saying that, Antoinette. We can't wait to see you in Donegal.
No problem. absolutely, absolutely. But look, I wish you well, and Declan, enjoy every minute of it, and fair play to him, you know.
Do you know, ladies, what I love about your story is that you have been through so much, your boys have been through so much as well, but isn't it amazing the bonds that are formed, and they do great work in the National Rehabilitation Hospital and various facilities as well, obviously all over the country, but in Dublin too. The bonds that are formed too, Frances, when you're going through maybe the toughest time in your life, or Antoinette, when things seem very bleak as well, how you stick together and how those friendships are formed.
That is definitely true. Like the people that we have met along the way, like it, you know, it helps you on your journey. And we continue to meet people, like, you know, like Antoinette and Dahi. Like, you know, it makes it that little bit easier. There's no doubt about it, to meet people, like, you know. And like that, Antoinette now is going to come to Donegal, like, you know, and we hopefully get to Limerick at some stage. And like, you make friendships that last your lifetime. I suppose that's what it's all about. Like, you know,
I'm thinking of a good friend of mine as well, telling me only recently about the great friends that kept her going as well through the National Rehabilitation Hospital and in Dunleary there as well. And just how it keeps you going, how you push each other on, and you're there for support, because I suppose only people in that situation can understand it. Thank you so much. You've helped us both today, Frances and Antoinette and Declan and Dahi. And we wish you all the very best.
Thank you very much for having us.
And Declan,
and talk to you soon.
Well done.
Bye.
You're a hero. 51551, if you've got similar stories or you've formed those similar bonds as well too, or if you've got a good old-fashioned story of a hero like Declan as well, we love to hear them.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, 0818 715 815.
And it's John Cook with you until 3. It's 51551 for your text if you want to get in touch. And remember, keep those budget issues coming our way as well, because we want you to have your say on how the government can spend the money, put it in the right places as well to make things easier for you as well. We'd love to know about your situation. Liveline at rte.ie as well for your emails. Bernadette, hello.
Hello, John. How are you?
I'm very well. And you?
I'm good, John. Thanks. I'm good.
Thank you for joining us on Liveline as well. Will you tell me a little bit, Bernadette, about your situation and about, well, your son as well, because we were hearing about great stories of mothers and sons there as well. Tell us about Owen.
Owen is 26 and he's Down syndrome. He goes to day services at the moment. you know, went to St. Michael's High School and went to school locally here. I suppose my issue is the carers means testing. I'd love to see it abolished. I'm 26 years. Well, obviously, I'm a mother first, but care for them.
Yeah.
And I'd love to see it abolished at this stage. I don't like the attitude of one size fits all. You know, Owen has a permanent intellectual disability. It's never going to go away, but we're in the system. Some people get carers, some people don't. And, you know, I just think it's an unfair system. Mm-hmm.
And as you mentioned, you know, you're a mother first, and your son Owen has grown up with your care and is now a young adult himself. How's he doing?
Exactly. He's doing good. He's doing good. But, you know, there's always going to be issues. Like, as I said to your researcher earlier, like, he doesn't know the day of the week. He doesn't know time. He doesn't know. So, like, for him to get out to day services in the morning, he has his alarms going off. But, like, if I left him to his own devices, he'd be still sitting there at 10 o'clock. You know, not going to say, no, like, he thinks the world will wait for him. You know,
I know a lot of people like that. We want to throw the alarm clock away there, but
yeah.
But Owen will say, what will he say to you about it? Or is he tired like the rest of us? Is it hard to get out? Or is it just hard to manage those issues, the day-to-day routine?
It's sometimes very hard to manage the issues, you know, especially when he was going to school. You know, there was issues and he just didn't want to go, let's say. And, you know, you'd be trying to get him out the door and the bus would pull up, but the bus would have to go and I'd have to try and keep him moving and then I might have to drive him there. And, you know, but as I do kind of say, like, I don't know how parents did it years ago. Like, I couldn't cross my fingers and hope he'd go out and come home that day on his own devices, like, while I went to work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just wouldn't have happened. It just couldn't happen. You know, there always has to be somebody around. Like, he can't be left too long on his own. We have all the devices, the trackers, the ring doorbells, the, you know, all the security devices that we can put in place. And if they weren't there, I wouldn't be able to do it. You know, like, I'm well able to monitor him on his bus and check the apps. And, like, if a bus doesn't turn up, he will either just stand there or walk somewhere on his own without me ringing him then and saying, no, stay there, there's another bus coming, you know, or things like that. You know, he will always need the guidance there. You know, the care. He will always need the care.
Do you always worry about him, Bernadette?
You know, but, like, that's nature. I worry about all my kids.
Well, that's the issue for any parent. But what I'm trying to get to is when do you feel recognised as a carer as well as a mother? Because the responsibility here is greater and it never gets easier for you.
No, it doesn't. But I think it's where some people get carers and some people don't. And it just seems unjust. You know, like, there's plenty of people out there who fall between the gaps of the means testing. And some people maybe just a small bit. And, you know, if you have a permanent situation, it's never going to change. I don't understand. And it's similarly when his medical card as well. He gets reviewed every 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to write in capital letters, no change. He still has Down syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there should be some kind of boxes that can be ticked at birth or, you know, or whenever the permanent situation may happen. You know, that it's never, like, there's no doctor in the land is going to tell me that it will change. And he won't need care.
Is that hurtful, Bernadette, or do you feel that somehow you're doubted there in terms of administrative forms and the things that have to be done over and over again, applying for your carer's allowance?
Yeah, well, you stop applying because you just know the means to. And I feel it's a sticky plaster. At one stage, we were getting talk in the Dáil of, you know, yes, there's whispers of, oh, means testing might be abolished, means testing might be abolished. And, like, there was hope. And then the sticky plaster came out and they widened it. And they'll probably widen it another bit and they'll widen it another bit. But it won't get to me and it won't get to the people who aren't qualifying, who are doing the carer's job.
And
I
want to just let our listeners know on that as well, because as you mentioned, the income thresholds have been increased, the government will point out to us.
Yes.
The abolition of the means test for carers, we're told, will be phased in. That's what the Taoiseach has told the Dáil this week, with a specific package for 100,000 carers, they say. Micheál Martin was answering questions from the Social Democrats calling for the test to be abolished in one fell swoop. And he said the government is still trying to pin down what full abolition would cost. one prediction of, I'm reading the Irish Independent, of €600 million and another of about half that sum. And Micheál Martin pointing out the income disregard for carers has gone up by almost half in the last budget. He says there'll be a similar move in the budget next Tuesday. 51551, by the way, if other listeners are affected by this. But Bernadette, are you still just over the threshold, or where will that leave you?
Yes, yes. It probably won't. It probably won't get to me, you know. And if it's over the next 5 years, I'll probably be on a pension by the time, you know, it does come in. But I just feel it's unfair when the one size does not fit all people. It just doesn't. And certainly in the carers' world, it doesn't. And if you have something like somebody with an intellectual disability, it's just permanent. You know, there should be some system out there, some support out there. You know, it's like send them off to day services, they'll be grand, you know, which that's not the case at all. It's not the case whatsoever. That's another issue, you know, that day services should be hugely improved, mm-hmm. and it would improve the lives, and then all our children wouldn't end up in residential, which there aren't any places anyway. But, you know, there's just ways of improving things so much if they would just talk to parents.
You mentioned,
but they don't talk to parents.
You don't want Owen to end up in care, as you said, or you're worried about getting close to your pension age as well. Are you worried about his future care?
Of course. Tony Murray was on this morning, on the Morning Live this morning, who started a big talk during the summer. Like, I look at Tony and them, you know, they're older than me, and I'm saying, and it's probably not going to get solved. When Owen went to school, we thought situations were going to change. You are looking at people ahead of you, still shouting and fighting constantly, and you're going, is this going to be us again? You know, here I am 60, and it is probably going to be us.
People will have seen the Murray story on Morning Ireland and on the RTÉ News website today as well. It's part of a group called Before We Die. That's what he's worried about, is dying before his daughter.
Of course, you know, and you don't want to go down that road yet because you hope you're not near it. But it's always there, you know, it's always there, you know, but it's just an unfair system. The system is wrong. You know, as I say, one size does not fit all. And I think when you have a permanent situation, we should fall into a different category.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have temporary carers out there. You have people who are carers, and there probably is people in the system who shouldn't be there at all, because there's always people trying to fool the system. But when you have a genuine case that no doctor is going to go against it, and you are permanently, I think you should be acknowledged. I think it's the least that could be done, is acknowledged.
Bernadette's call is to end the means test for carers allowance now.
Absolutely.
And she wants to be recognised. It's an issue we've heard from many on Liveline as well, including last week. Even we were talking to people who I know, words sticking in my head of one parent saying that as long as she wants her children to live with their additional needs, she just would hope and pray to God that she'd live one day longer as well. It's a huge worry for many. 51551 for your texts. Patricia, good afternoon.
Hiya, how are you, John?
And Patricia, you're listening to Bernadette, and you tell us about your story, about your family and your daughter, Tara, please.
Yeah, thanks very much. I was speaking to you, I think, before, but, our story is our daughter, Tara, is 40 and living at home with us. And I suppose I highlighted it a couple of years ago that I was out 40 years, I got the carer's allowance for 1 year. This was due to the fact my husband had finished work and his pension hadn't kicked in, so we got it for 1 year out of 40. So it's a long time to be supporting someone to live at home without being recognised by the state.
You don't feel recognised either, Patricia.
Well, I suppose, you know, I would say that Tara is kind of now 40, and, you know, surely she should be entitled to have her own independence. But not having that, she's been supported by us. And I use the term supported because she needs a lot of physical care, but she needs a lot of care, like, you know, support like taxi, going to appointments, going out socially, going to classes. You know, she needs support in every avenue of her life.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's what I suppose we are doing as her parents.
And Patricia, why don't you get the carer's allowance then? Is it about income also?
Yeah, it's about income, yeah. Because myself and my husband were always working. I was working I think that's another thing. You can only work, I think, 18 hours. So I've been working in the CUH lab for kind of all my life, part-time. I have to say a shout-out to my colleagues in work because they have supported me as well in being able to work. My husband was working in DSP. Now he has retired, but he works part-time. So because the two of us work, we are over the income threshold. But that doesn't, you know, the fact that we're working doesn't compromise Tara's support because I work the end of the week and he works the start of the week. So, you know, there's always someone here.
It sounds, Patricia, like you're doing what you can to make ends meet, but obviously as well to look after Tara.
Yeah, but also, I mean, we have had five other children. So, I mean, we had to work. Mm-hmm. We had to work.
Yeah.
You know, they were going through school, college, etc., and still are going through college. So it's not that we, you know, we needed to work. So, but because we have managed to work, then we are over the income threshold.
Does it put you under pressure financially, Patricia?
Pardon me?
Does it put you under pressure financially now?
No, I wouldn't say. I would just say, the allowance would help us do other things for Tara, to be honest, because, I mean, she's on disability allowance.
Yeah.
Now, that wouldn't keep anyone on, you know, in their life, mm-hmm. in their lifestyle. So we are supporting her to live, you know, a good life, living at home, you know. And so that allowance really would be, first of all, it would be recognition because, I mean, we're 24 hours a day, you know, supporting her.
Yes,
and it would mean that we could, you know, do things a little bit differently.
Of course. It sounds like you're doing a great job of it, Patricia.
Sure. You know, I think every parent, you know, just does their best. But what I would like to say is that really, you know, if they're talking about measuring the, I don't even know what the carer's allowance is now, maybe €240 a week. I mean, that's 168 hours in the week. So, I mean, that's, you can work that out yourself, what that is worth per hour for people, you know, who are
it's round the clock here.
What they want to do, really, you know, it's not always that they don't want to do it. But, you know, she does depend on us. Mm-hmm. And I think it would be something that I'm sure everyone would say, you know, that they should really assess the need and the care that the person gets and not the means coming into the house. Mm-hmm.
And also in turning you down for what that means, I think, to you, Patricia, and to Bernadette as well. You want to be recognised as carers. You are great carers and great mothers too. Thank you for joining us.
Get in touch with Liveline on 0818 715 815.
And 51551 for your text. And just to reiterate, the government says they are committed to the abolition of the means test for carers over its term of office. It's in the programme for government. They were commenting, of course, as well in the Dáil on a report from Family Carers Ireland that tells us that an overwhelming majority of carers, 70% of carers, find it difficult to make ends meet. It's something we'd like to hear from you about as well. 51551 or liveline at rte.ie about this and other things besides as well. Anne, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, John.
And how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Tell us about the budget, because do you live in hope at this time of year now, or what's your situation?
Well, I'm retired just over 5 years and I have my old age pension and a small private pension as well. I'm talking about €500 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And when the two are added together, I'm into the tax bracket. So no matter what increase comes in the budget, 20% of that's taken out of my private pension or tax. So which is really annoying at this stage. I've paid tax all my life and I'm still paying tax.
Mm-hmm.
So if the increase in the budget, you know, we should allow for that, because I said €500 just about keeps me going. You know, I mean, I couldn't live on the state pension. I don't think anyone could.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if the state pension went up by €10, there's a 20% of that gone on tax because the revenue gets it indirectly. You know, so as I say, it really needs to go up about €25 a week, the state pension, and then there'll be €5 that goes back to revenue.
Do you think that's likely to happen, Anne? We've been, you say 25 euro a week in terms of pension increases. I think there was talk of 12 and a suggestion that that's unlikely as well, or 15, unlikely too, because we're seeing all the kites flying ahead of the budget. What do you expect?
I expect about a tenner, to be honest with you. You know, I mean, they don't live in the real world, you know, like everybody else does. And the price of food going up every week, every time you go to the shop, the prices have gone up again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they'll have to do something or else increase the tax threshold for pensioners. It's been, once your income goes over 18,000 euro a year,
mm-hmm.
you're into the tax bracket. So if they even increase that to 22 or 23,000, it'd be some help.
Okay. That's your call, Anne. That's your budget wish. And thanks for that as well. Liveline at rte.ie. If you've got others, we'd love to hear from more listeners, as many as possible ahead of the budget as well. Michael McAvoy, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
And thanks very much for joining us as well. If you don't mind me asking, I won't ask too many personal questions, but are you relying on the state pension as well?
Yes, I am indeed. It's a little bit extra. I find it difficult at the moment with the state pension, because by the time you pay your gas bills, your electricity bills, and all the bills are coming in the door, and then, as your last caller said, 20% on anything that they give us, it's not worth it. Mm-hmm.
Tenor, would it make much of a difference to you, as Anne expects?
Well, a tenner or 12 euros at the end of the day, the it's going to be charged at 20% or whatever the rate of tax that you're on.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not really worth it.
Are you living alone, Michael?
I live alone, yes. I live alone. It's hard because sometimes I would rather like to see maybe doing something more for the people that are out there that are feeling lonely at home, that haven't got anywhere to go. Like I'm very lucky that I'm affiliated to the Friends of the Elderly in Bolton Street, and I only came across them about 3 years ago, and they've been a lifesaver for me, you know, in the sense that it gets me out of where I live. Although if you're living at home and you're living on your own, sometimes there isn't a body to say hello to, or somebody to, you know, to call to the house and have a chat or anything like that.
Is that the way you felt, Michael? You said they were a lifesaver. How hard was loneliness for you?
Sometimes when you're at home in your own house and you feel that you're not feeling well enough, or you haven't got a headache, or you have a pain in your back or something like that, it's sometimes hard. With somebody there, a support group that, you know, can ring up, pick up the phone and say, "Well, Michael, how are you feeling today?" That's a great lift for somebody like myself, that I'm on my own. And although I have family and I like to be independent, I've always been independent all my life.
Uh-huh. Michael, we're out of time, I'm afraid. It's been lovely to talk to you. I am so glad that you have reached out to friends and to groups. And I'm hearing your call, as well as the pension, as for funding and support for those groups that help so many people out there who may be lonely or need to get out of the house. And I want to hear more of those suggestions, please. Liveline at rte.ie.